This is the Power Producers Podcast, where we are refining and redefining the sales game.
Rule number one is you have to believe in yourself. You're the only one who doesn't think you belong in this appointment. The prospect has already validated your existence by scheduling time with you. Get it through your head you belong here, go in there, crush it, and close the deal.
A place where sales professionals can come to learn from other sales professionals and thought leaders that have mastered their craft.
The difference between a good salesperson and a best-in-class salesperson is only 2 minutes. By spending an extra 2 minutes on what you might think is a mundane task in the sales game, you separate yourselves from the pack, you grow your book of business, you close more deals, and you retain your accounts.
As well as their peers who are still striving for perfection to achieve their why.
I have a wife and 4 kids. Failure is not an option.
Real sales professionals. Real stories. Real results.
It's no different than being a professional baseball player. You can't be a one-trick pony. You have to be a 5-tool player in order to succeed in this game.
This is the Power Producers Podcast, production redefined. Are you ready to feel the power?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Power Producers Podcast, where we are refining and redefining the sales game. After quite a bit of technical difficulties, I am happy to introduce Mr. Bogus Hansel. We're going to talk about all kinds of things because Bogus has a pretty unique agency up in the Chicago area. And so I'm going to talk to him about systems and processes they have in place there and how they handle just all of the traffic. Because if I remember correctly, he writes a lot of business in very specific ethnic area of Chicago, and that presents some interesting challenges, but also a lot of opportunities. So we do not have visual on Kyle. We did very poor risk management and did not get him up and running with plenty of time to record this. So we're just going to kick it off and roll with it. So Bogus, before we get running, why don't you just sort of give everybody the big overview so they know who you are and kind of what your background is, and then we'll be off to the races.
Bogus Hansel. Based out of Chicago. I say Chicago loosely because it's really a suburb of Chicago, but if you ask anybody from Chicago where they're from, they're always going to say Chicago regardless of the 60, 70 mile radius. And our agency niche is the Polish community here in Chicago. So father immigrated over, decided to create a livelihood for himself and figured that insurance was the best way to do it. So we as an agency grew out of non-standard auto. And as our clients immigrated over and began to create livelihoods for themselves and their families, we started adding products. We're about a team of 27 as of today. And that's basically a little high-level overview without going into details.
Man, 27 team members, that is a lot. Like, that's double what we deal with here easily. So I'm interested, man, how do you handle all of that? In number one, in number two, are these people all fluent in the languages needed? I mean, does everybody, I'm going to show my ignorance. I don't know. Does everybody speak Polish or do you have other languages from that region? Cause I've got friends that have been from like Estonia. And if you listen to how they speak, you think they're talking Russian, but they're not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Slavic language, it's similar, although if you look at the alphabet, it's very, very different. I'm going to say that 25 of our team members are fluent in Polish. Wow. We have a few that speak Ukrainian and Russian but can understand Polish, aren't fluent in Polish speaking. And then we have one team member, Araceli, who speaks Spanish and English. So everybody is either bilingual or trilingual in the agency.
Wow. Trilingual is tough.
Well, I mean, Then you got guys like Bob Klinger who have people. I mean, he's probably speaks 8 languages on his own, but you know, he's got, I don't even remember how many languages aggressive. Klinger has. Yeah. It's insane how many languages they speak. But if you think about it, I mean, that really opens the door to a lot of opportunity for people who don't have that ability. I mean, you almost get, I don't want to say a monopoly, but you almost have the market cornered to a certain degree. If people have the comfort level, they're going to be able to communicate with you in a language they're comfortable with. I could not imagine moving to a foreign country and have to deal with something as technical as insurance and not be able to communicate with the person in a language that I speak and understand, right? Yeah. That's got to be absolutely brutal.
Yeah, I think the Chicago's, you know, I'd probably say is kind of unique in the sense that a lot of Polish immigrants immigrate over to Chicago and New York specifically. So there's a lot of options. But where it differs is how much work are you willing to put in on the back end in those processes and in that information on what insurance actually is to make it easy on those clients. So, you know, the communication thing is one thing, but then giving them all that value behind the scenes, that's where, you know, we try to strive to be above everybody else and provide a lot of value there.
So at this point, I mean, your agency's been around for your dad to see his way through, and now you and your brother are running things at this point. I'm assuming I've never met your dad, but you're the guys that I see. I don't know if he's still in the picture or not, but you know,
he is. Yeah.
Okay. So what's that like? What's that dynamic like? How do you take someone who is literally has left the country they were born in, emigrated to the United States, build a business, you and your brother step in and you take over something that I'm going to make the assumption was relatively successful to begin with, but then make the moves you need to make to take that business into the next century as far as technology and all of that stuff goes?
Yeah. I'll say the dynamic is really my brother and I, the day-to-day stuff. We started taking over ownership about 3.5 years ago. Our father still is in the office here and there, kind of manages our life and health book. That's where you got to start. He worked for New York Life Insurance, going door-to-door life insurance sales. Before he realized the mandatory auto insurance law was going to come into effect in Illinois. This is a story I've told probably 100 times now. But that day that law came into effect, he had a line out the door selling non-standard auto, okay? 3.5 hours was the average wait time. Sold 114 handwritten applications. That one day came home with $40,000 cash because the banks had closed. Was shaking in his boots when he wrote a commitment of premium for $20,000. In that first year, he sold over $1 million in non-standard auto. The average premium price about $85. So that's a sales record that no one's ever gonna beat in a day. But that
or likely wants to beat in a day, to be honest with you.
Seriously.
That sounds absolutely terrible and horrifying all at the same time.
Yeah, paper applications. He had one guy that he ran out of paper applications. The carrier he signed with happened to be a couple blocks down from where the agency was. Guy ran, brought back more paper applications, got to skip the line. But you know, he was signing it, selecting it. That's back, you know, you had a booklet, pinwheel, this is what the coverage is, type of situation. All contact paper stuff. So as that progressed, obviously things changed, right? So when I've been in the industry now 18 years, came in straight out of high school, I'm more of a hands-on type of learner. So I needed to kind of get into the nitty gritty. But young kid coming to an agency, I grew up around computers, basically, you know, AOL 1.0 moving forward. There were things that the agency needed to catch up on. Now, where the challenges really struck for us was my dad had a good team in place for thinking ahead, which was great. But when Lucas and I kind of came in and started making changes in processes, we realized that we needed to kind of go back to the beginning and follow Billy Williams. You got to clean up the job site before you kind of move forward. And we did that from the beginning, rebuilding the culture while maintaining, you know, employees number 2, 3, 5 from the agency. So some of our team members have been around for 31, 32 years, and the agency's been around for 32 years.
Wow. That's nuts, man. So number one, definitely have grown up in the same time because I didn't even have email or internet until my sophomore year of college. Right. So you're a little bit younger than I am, but I still remember getting the floppy disks and then the CD-ROMs in the mail from AOL, like, almost every day, it seemed like, which I can't imagine how much money they spent. I mean, Steve Case, the guy that was the CEO of AOL, actually lives in Tampa and is active in the tech community now. I should see if I can't get his ear someday to just talk about what it was like to go through that. It's got to be a ridiculous story. But, you know, that's not an easy kind of business to be writing in volume. I mean, number one, I imagine you have to write it in volume to really make money at it, because like from everybody I know that delves into that non-standard market, some of the wealthiest people in the industry that I know are in the non-standard market, to be honest with you, because you're selling the same policy in some cases 3, 4, or 5 times a year, depending. So How do you get your arms around that? I mean, coming in as a young dude with tech knowledge and being exposed to tech is one thing, but then getting your arms around that kind of volume, where do you even start?
I mean, I think one of the things is you have to understand the culture. I wouldn't compare each non-standard policy the same way. Like, it's not apples to apples, right? You have to realize and understand why they need a non-standard policy. And primarily, it's not because, let's say, that they're, you know, bad on payments or late payer or, you know, have a higher risk or anything like that. But more so for us, it was when people immigrated over, they had international driver's license. Preferred carrier isn't going to take them. They didn't start taking them until a little later. Now you can put them in the progressives and so on and so forth, but they needed a starting point in their insurance journey, right? So that's where that kind of fell into that non-standard market. The processes were brutal because all that stuff until recently, and even still now, a lot of that stuff's agency bill. So if you've dealt with any sort of agency bill, even on the commercial side.
I hate agency bill with a passion.
Yeah.
Possibly imagine.
Now imagine, you know, all the renewal notices, everything, you know, we had to create, we had to send them out. We had to make sure we send them out. So we're still paper heavy just because we have all those processes. But because we had to do those, we were able to kind of evolve and say, hey, you know, if you call in and we pick up the phone, Hawksoft pops up and I see your language preference is Polish. Your communication from there on out is in Polish. So all the letters that you get from us, all the renewal notices, everything moving forward is in that language that you prefer. So it helped us kind of fine tune those processes that we have within the agency. But I mean, yeah, it's tough, especially when it comes to changing the mentality of some of the senior team members to change their processes and actually use the tech that we've added in. That's the biggest challenge moving forward.
So I'll tell you what, man, we went to Rough Notes headquarters in Indianapolis when I was up there last fall. And if you want to talk about lack of technology, it's insane. But I mean, I guess it could actually be considered technology. Did you know Rough Notes actually had like a Rough Notes branded desk?
No.
And it was so they have a branded desk. It's built with very specific sized drawers and slots and all of that. Every single slot has its own proprietary application or change request or whatever that goes in there. But the whole thing was you were able to sit at this desk and it was your agency management system. I'm doing a horrible job of butchering, you know, what it looked like. I mean, it was actually cool to see it because you could see that it was like a physical representation of what we have now turned into software and web-based applications. But what was scary was the fact that he told us that there's over 500 agencies in the country that still use the Rough Notes desk.
Oh, really?
And they know because they order refills on the applications. So I get what you're saying with that. Of your labor force, how much of that, I mean, is everybody in your agency like physically in Chicago, or are you outsourcing some of that labor to virtual professionals?
No, I mean, we use a company that does some of the back-end data processing, that kind of stuff. So if we get, let's say, a deck page for an agency bill policy, we just set up the suspense and then the Hawksoft to go in and just pre-fill all that information that doesn't download in. Same thing with prepping some of that renewal data stuff. At one point, for each client, a customer care team member would have to go in when they review the account coming up for renewal and manually type in, hey, this is what the premium is and this is what the premium finance breakdown is. So we've automated a lot of those touch points. But we still have to oversee it. But that's when we have those care companies kind of come in and do the actual data processing. And much rather have my team members have insurance conversations rather than nonsense.
Yeah, no, 100%, man. And I mean, that's really the way that we're headed too. I mean, if you're talking about cleaning up the job site, I've been pretty vocal about it the last few podcasts we've recorded, but we're in a position right now where we're going all in to get Hawksoft completely set up the way that it needs to be set up, so that we can not abandon HubSpot by any stretch. But, you know, HubSpot has essentially been the driving force for inbound leads and lead scoring and automated marketing and service ticket requests and all of that stuff. And as a result, that's where my attention's been focused. But we're at a point right now where, you know, it gets painful at some point if you don't have Hawksoft set up the way that it really needs to be set up and optimized to run for your agency. So I just bit the bullet at the beginning of 23. I said, you know what? I'm going to go hire Peggy Corbett from Agency Transform and have her come in as a consultant, basically blank check, set it up however it needs to be set up. Want you to train my virtual professionals that we've brought in on how to use it, because my goal is by the end of this year is to have 100% of the non-client facing, non-revenue bearing, non-heavy lifting type customer service tasks, all of that to be completely outsourced. Because
I want to never touch Hawksoft again.
Yeah, well, you're not going to be allowed. I'm actually locking all, I'm going to lock good. All producers out of it. But
I think I mess it up more than I do any good.
Well, I mean, the thing is, Bogus is going to be able to speak to this more than anybody else, because I know that he's involved heavily with both the user group, you know, and just somebody who's used Hawksoft for a number of years in particular. But you've got to have common practices set up and have everybody marching to the beat of the same drummer. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really fell down. You know, when we brought Hawksoft in 5 or 6 years ago, excellent onboarding experience. I cannot put any of the fault on the company whatsoever, because they gave us the tools to succeed. I think the issue is we had so many people here that went through that one-on-one training with the lady who onboarded us, and then they had their own interpretation of that training. And so almost right out of the box, man, we've got people doing things different ways. I'm focused on driving sales. I'm focused on building out HubSpot. I don't pay attention to it. And so I was a little bit concerned as to what it was really going to look like when we got in there and started poking around. I was relieved to find out that, according to Peggy, it wasn't as bad as what I personally thought it was. She said this is actually not bad at all. But I had zero confidence about any of that. And so, you know, we're at a point now where she's coming in, she's putting processes and procedures in place. They'll be able to train the virtual professionals to do it all 100% consistently across the board, which makes our life a whole lot easier. Then it can be, I can hold people accountable to a standard. Look, I know how to manage. I know how to market. I've got degrees in both, but at the end of the day, my passion's in marketing, not operations. And if it's not my passion, it's not going to get my attention. So in a sick and twisted way, I'm kind of excited to go through the pain of this experience just to see what it looks like. But the main thing is, you know, I told her when I engaged her, I said, look, I'm a big boy. I've got thick skin. Just shoot it to me straight. You don't need to try and candy coat anything. And, you know, honestly, so she asked, she said, what am I going to see when I get in there? I said, you're going to see an agency that's run by a really good producer who's never been an account manager or a CSR. That's what you're going to see. Hawksoft will likely reflect that because, you know, I'm not the detail guy. And I will tell you, and I would say this to encourage any other users out there that haven't taken the time to really learn how the product works and some of the things you can do to set it up in your favor. You know, we've had just a couple of really quick sessions where Peggy went in and did a dive in really for about an hour. And then another team member, Stephanie, came in last week and said, it basically, she was in for an hour and said, I'm just going to set up some of the standard things that we do. Well, what's crazy is, like, just the one setup that she spent an hour doing, and I'm looking and seeing that at the top, there's literally a button that'll take me all the way to the COI screen, as opposed to me going and doing all of those steps every single time. That was always my biggest issue with any agency management system, was there's got to be a way to create shortcuts or something to get where you need to go.
There's like at least 46 buttons you have to click.
but not anymore, right? Yeah. So they came in and they set all that stuff up in there, and I can already, just with that one session, see, you know, smack myself around a little bit and say, wow, I really should have paid more attention to this. But just see what it's going to do for us, because things that were painful are not going to be nearly as painful anymore. And, you know, the certificate issue in our agency is not a big one to begin with, because we use eCerts online in their self-service portal to issue, you know, everything after renewal for our clients. So that's the other thing. You know, it hadn't really been a huge pain point, but unfortunately last spring, you know, our top account manager passed away. And when she did, that's when I really started diving deeper into Hawksoft. Thank God she was as methodical as she was, because everything was in there the way that it was supposed to be in there. She was using her suspenses the right way, labeling and categorizing things consistently. So when we had to split time covering her desk, it made it very, very easy for us to do that. And so that's where it came from. But I mean, when you got in, number one, I guess, I know you're using Hawksoft now specifically, but how, you know, is that the agency management system that was already in place, or was that a decision y'all had to make?
No. So we were on, originally we were on the first, I guess if we're going to go back, when I joined the agency, we were on TAM. So we brought everything over TAM into AMS 360 in 2009. And then we moved to Hawksoft in end of 2018. So we brought over about 75,000 digital files into our transition into Hawksoft, just because we had made the decision early on to try keeping that data computer-based as early as possible, be it internally on our servers or wherever it might be. And, so it was a big chunk of data that we ended up bringing over, but we made the decision when my brother and I came in and we started changing processes and kind of cleaning up the job site. We realized that after 2 years of trying to have people change their bad habits, the way input data into the management system wasn't changing. We basically said, we're cutting the head off the snake and we're going to a new agency management system. And then it was finding which one was going to be correct for our agency.
So I know you're engaged heavily in the user group, you know. And it's interesting to me because it's based on Facebook, which a lot of people are probably active on Facebook. I don't know how many employers are happy that people go to Facebook during the day. But, you know, that is also a really, really good resource and one that we haven't used as much as we should. But I mean, that's a really active user group that's been built inside of Facebook. What makes that special from your perspective?
I think you've been around Hawksoft community for quite some time. And I think specifically is the culture of Hawksoft users, I think, is very different from some of the different agency management systems just based on average size, I'd say. So you have that willingness to help one another. And I think that's where the agencies really kind of turned around in the last 5 to 10 years, is that agents are willing to help other agents rather than seeing them as competition. And it really comes down to the nitty-gritty of processes as well. So that user group is great because if someone doesn't have an answer for it, someone will suggest a solution, and then you'll actually see the problem solving happen within that thread of how someone can get to where they're trying to go, be it outside of Facebook, on a phone call or a Zoom call or even a webinar that, you know, the hug group puts on. But the willingness to help one another, I think, goes above and beyond what I've seen in other management system user groups.
What do you think changed recently? You said it's been in the last 5 years or so that people are more willing to help out and not looking at other individuals as competition as much. What do you think changed?
I mean, I think that the way that carriers started approaching the direct writing and maybe the marketing and direct carriers kind of became a little bit more stronger, in my opinion. I mean, you're still going to get that, hey, this agency down the street might be trying to go after the same client as I am. But I don't think it's that same type of marketing approach than it was in like the early 90s, especially not for us, right? We had another large agency in our community was legitimately half a block down from our agency where we originally started. So you could feel the tension almost with that. Where now, you know, we golf with those agency owners. It's a normal conversation about, hey, how's your team doing? How's our team doing? Where are your pain points? That's stuff that I felt wasn't shared before. And I see that happening more so out there on the community, right? So you have more of these independent agency owners that are coming into the space that don't need to get direct contracts. They can go through aggregators, and then they're coming in and asking for help. And you have some of the senior agency owners saying, hey, you know, I was at that point one time in my life. This is what I did. And these are the things that you're going to have to look out as you grow for. So I think just culture's changed in the space.
I think to add on to that, man, I think there's a couple other caveats to that. Number one, obviously the digital era and the rise of social media has changed a lot because you now have access to agents from all over the country in groups like IAOA or Insurance Soup or any of those, but also some of the private masterminds like what Jason Cass has. And there's several others of those out there. And I think that ideas are more free-flowing because people feel safe communicating for the most part in those types of arenas, which makes it easier when you're communicating in person too. I think the other caveat, though, is the fact that there's so much stuff out there now that's trying to cut us out and go direct to consumer.
Yeah.
That there's almost become an us versus them mentality kind of thing. And it's created a stronger bond with agents amongst each other, as opposed to.
That's a good point.
Them looking at each other as much as competition, because we are all very much aware that there are plenty of people out there that are coming up with products and systems that'll, you know, at some point try to remove the agent from the middle of the mix. I don't know that anybody will ever be successful, but we're smart enough to realize that not any one of our agencies alone is going to be able to fight that battle. And so there's this inherent kind of, I don't want to call it groupthink, but this inherent tendency for people to pull together to fight the bigger monster, I think.
Yeah. The other thing too, is there's an overwhelming supply of, let's say, third-party technology coming out nowadays, right? So you don't know what to look for. Back then, it was very different as to how someone approached it. You know, if somebody from an AMS system came in through my door, I said, hey, I'm here. This is my sales pitch. This is what we do. This is what we can do for your agency. Now they're getting bombarded with emails, or they're seeing webinars on what systems can do for them. They're more likely to ask other agency owners what works and what doesn't work and what they need to look out for, rather than just having that conversation with that salesperson specifically. So that collaboration has really just increased tenfold, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so too. So, you know, the other thing is, I think it's important for people to know. I mean, again, Hawksoft does a great job about pushing this stuff out, but the user group costs nothing, right? There's no real cost to be involved in that. I mean, obviously, if you go to the annual conference, there's some costs and things associated with that, but you know, I was there briefly to speak at the one that was here in Orlando last year. And I was just pleasantly surprised, number one, by the turnout that was there. It seemed to be a very well attended conference. And number two, the fact that it wasn't relegated to just using their system. I mean, I was there to talk about workers' comp and how to sell it. That has nothing to do with Hawksoft or the agency management system. So the fact that they're willing to put resources in and have conversations around topics other than just their technology inside the user group is huge.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of the approach that the user group kind of takes to it, is that you know that there are people that are going to be there to learn how to use the system, right? So you have to have different levels of knowledge based on, okay, is it advanced level reporting, or is it kind of, you know, we had people at the conference last year that had been on Hawksoft for 5 days and showed up. Right. Mm-hmm. So you have that different learning curve going through that. But also you want to give the ability for other agency owners or team members to learn from people that are doing something specific in the market. Say, you know, on your hand, workers' comp. Right. My brother and I, we had a session on, the transition of our agency and ownership and how we were able to keep the culture moving forward and keep long term team members happy. And what we had to approach as a young owner is coming into the agency, taking over. So there's different value sets that are added within that national conference. And it's just fantastic how it's kind of rounded out to be pretty, pretty neutral as a whole.
Talk about that part for a second, though, the pointers that you're given on the succession, because I think that's something that is going to be happening more and more here as the old guard kind of changes. Speak about that for a minute.
that's a slippery slope, because everybody is in a different point of that. It kind of depends on how, you know, working with family is definitely not easy by any standards. My brother and I, you know, when we moved into our new office location, you know, we had to make room for 27 team members. And it came to a point where my brother and I weren't going to have separate offices. So we bunked up so we could yell at each other and not agree on something from a business standpoint. And 10 minutes later, say we're going to get lunch. And having the ability to kind of cut that off and keep family separate from business is really difficult, especially if you're working with, let's say, a father or mother that started the agency, because they might not be ready to let go of that. So you have to have difficult conversations and see what their frustrations are, where the pain points are, what they're worried about. And you need to know how to approach them. And that's something very difficult for a family member to do, in my opinion. So,
well, you did a better job than I did. I ended up with my own agency out of the deal. So...
Yeah, it was definitely not an easy thing to do. That's for sure. So
yeah, no, it is tough, man. Because I don't know. It's a very, very difficult dynamic. But what I will tell you is that the inability for me to successfully coexist with my father in the agency environment has ensured that will never happen between me and my son. It's just not. It's impossible. And, you know, I think that you're right, man. It's how it's communicated. I think that you have to have very intentional expectations set on the front end, and you need to be very clear that it's not a quick process. Like, it's not like you're going to just walk out one day and your dad's going to walk out one day and just hand you the keys and say, good luck, here's everything. You know, he's like you said, he's still involved in the agency today. And so that's why I've been so intentional with Grayson and bringing him in. I don't ever want that to happen, because number one, it's awesome that he wants to, right? This has been 100% driven by him. I have never encouraged my kids to come here and work. You know, I've not kept them from that, but it's going to have to happen under some very well thought out and intentional ground rules. And that's one of the reasons why I told him he needed to go get a job somewhere else first. And he went and worked at Publix for a couple of years, because I wanted him to learn customer service, learn some general business stuff, but mostly to see how it is to deal with the public at their absolute worst, because you're going to be dealing with customer service for the rest of your career at this point. And then when I brought him in and told him that he, you know, and I told him 2 years, well, 2 years in a day, he comes to me and says, I'm ready to come in. Okay, great. He listened. You're going to edit video for the next year. You're going to learn social marketing, digital distribution, all of these things. That's what I need you to practice on and get really good at. And I said, I don't want any lip. There's not going to be an early exit from that. But in a year, if you've done this successfully and our numbers have grown and you've proven to me you'll take it serious, then we'll talk about getting you licensed to be a producer. Well, you know, 2 months in, he was already bored with it, didn't want to do it anymore, and came to me and I was like, that's not going to work, man. I said, it was a year. You got to stick with it for a year. And then he saw that we were expanding more and more as to what I was teaching him, what his responsibilities were. But at the same time, you know, we're at the agency success conference, like a month or two after we had our initial, no, you're going to do this for an entire year conversation. And as he's registering at the table, I hear him say, you know, somebody says, what's it like working with your dad? He's like, oh man, he goes, it's amazing. I love it. And I'm thinking, man, this is exactly what I need to hear. He goes, and I'm learning so much because I'm editing all these podcasts and I'm getting to listen to these interviews with these great agents from all over the country. It's like, I'm going to know what I need to know from a sales aspect and everything as soon as I'm ready to go out and start producing. And I tapped him on the shoulder. I was like, your dad was raised with Mr. Miyagi, man. I know how wax on, wax off works. There's a reason why I wanted you to do this. You just now figured it out. It only took you 4 months, but now you know what the deal is. And so he did that, and he's done very, very well in that aspect of our business. And so at the beginning of the year, you know, he's enrolled, he's taken his pre-licensing coursework, ready to go get his license, and he'll be a producer in the agency, and he'll do very, very well at that. But he understands how I communicate. I understand how he communicates, and we take advantage of that. I'm set in my ways to a certain degree, but I'm also very open-minded, and I will hear out what other people have to say and take those things into consideration before I make decisions that are going to affect the agency. And Grayson's very comfortable in giving me feedback and telling me what his opinion is. And if I don't agree with it, that's okay. And if I do agree with it, then that may be the next great idea for the agency. But we do have open dialogue, and he knows that he can come to me with literally anything, and I'm not going to bite his head off and tell him he's stupid or that's a horrible idea or no, we'll never do that because it's always been done this way. I'm just not going to do that because he is very much like me. And the one thing that I know, and I talked about this on a podcast that was outside of the norm last week, but for me, I'm extremely entrepreneurial, period. If you show me a revenue stream, I'm going to show you how to make 6 revenue streams from that revenue stream. I will figure it out. And when you're an entrepreneur like that, you have to be able to scratch the itch. You have to be able to fulfill that part of your life, because if you don't, you're never going to be satisfied. You're never going to love your actual work product. And so, you know, I was in an agency for 8 years where I wasn't able to scratch that itch inside the agency. So I went outside. I built a big portfolio of e-commerce websites that are still giving me passive revenue today because I couldn't exercise my entrepreneurial ability inside the agency. So I need to, that's the one thing I'm cognizant of. I want the people here that are free thinkers and want to go out and explore different ideas to see if they're going to work or not. I want them to know that we're willing to listen to anything. We want to hear those things because that's the only way we're going to get better. And that's probably one of my biggest criticisms of the generation before mine is they aren't willing to have those conversations. And I know that's a blanket statement. I'm not talking about every single agency principal out there. I'm just saying there's a large number of them that just, they don't care. They're not interested in hearing what you have to say. It's always been done a certain way. The staff isn't going to listen to you anyhow because it's always been done that way. And the agency principal is still at the helm, and it makes it very, very difficult to figure out a succession plan if you're not collaborating before the agency principal has one foot out the door.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing that that conversation kind of comes up when I start talking to younger agency to potential owners that are coming second, third generation, even ones that have been around that have already taken over the agency, still feel some of those pain points, is because it's tough to get that conversation started. Now, I really appreciate what you're doing with your son. For me, it was very different. Is I didn't have that straightforward role. We didn't have those conversations. I didn't know how to start that conversation. It got to the point where we realized that what the expectation of me was learn, trial and error, right? So if I did something wrong, we'd have a conversation. If I did something right, great, we might implement it. But that wasn't the right approach, what I needed coming into or trying to move into that position. So that took a couple of years to kind of figure out that that's the route it was going to take, right? I expected, hey, you know, you've built this amazing business. You've created these shoes that are absolutely massive to fill. I want to continue this legacy. How do I do it? And I, you know, my expectation was that you're going to sit down with me, you know, on Monday and talk. This is how accounting looks like. This is what the commission statement looks like. Those are the conversations that were happening, right? You have so many moving parts in agency, and especially as an agency owner, you're wearing a lot of different hats. And at the end of the day, you're worried about that revenue stream. To cut some time out, it's a little tough, but you have to be able to have that conversation both ways. And that took a long time for us to figure out how to do that. And the only reason we really started progressing and moving forward at such a quick pace in recent years is because when my brother joined the agency, we were able to split responsibilities. So I took front of house, personal lines, who took accounting and commercial lines. And that way, if there's a question that comes up, we're not both answering that same question. If it's commercial lines, go to Lucas. If it's personal lines, come to me. And that kind of really sped everything up. But it took a long time to get to that point where when we were making that transition to have the right conversations.
Yeah, I think, you know, my approach with Grayson is going to be much different than it would be with a producer that came in off the streets, too, just because at some point I would like to see him have the ability to perpetuate the agency. But if that's not something that's going to happen tomorrow, hopefully it's not something that's going to happen, you know, even 5 years from now. Right. And so he also understands that at this point, I've proven to him enough times that I'm having him go at the cadence that I'm having him go for a very specific reason. But just because he goes out and gets his license doesn't mean he's immediately going to be a full-time producer. I think he needs to sit at the CSR desk. I think he needs to sit at the account manager desk. I think he needs to spend time with the accounting people so that he can understand it, learn and understand all of these things. Number one, so that if he's going to be responsible for them one day, he can say, I remember this, I remember that. But number two, it also helps the people that are responsible for those things now understand that I'm not just handing this kid the keys to the kingdom, and he needs to come in and spend time learning the business. The other thing is, we're actually in a really good spot because Kyle is kind of the median between me and Grayson. So Grayson's role in any type of succession planning for Florida Risk Partners is going to be him moving in to replace Kyle. It's never going to be him to come in and replace me. And I've been very clear on that from the front end. You know, Kyle has been very loyal to me. He's helped me, you know, build this thing and continues to. And, you know, I'm not going to just pass him over because my son decides he wants to come into the industry. That would be a horrible thing for me to do to number one, to Kyle for a number of reasons, but it would also be a really bad business decision because Grayson's just still going to be wet behind the ears and not ready for that. He's not had any leadership or management training or any responsibility doing that. So it makes way more sense for me to let him have gradual increases of responsibilities, learning how to interact and manage people. One of the things that I, you know, did this morning was I hired a virtual professional to come in and replace Grayson as the marketing director for the agency. He's trained Landon on how to do a lot of these things, but Landon is probably not going to end up at Florida Risk Partners. I'm perfectly fine with that. I mean, I love him. He's my son, but if he doesn't have an interest, I'm not going to force him to do it. He's a completely different animal than what my Grayson is. And that's the cool part about having four kids, because none of the four of them are the same in any way, shape, or form. Grayson's much more like I am. And so that's one of the reasons why it's a little bit easier for me to deal with him. Landon's a little bit more of a creative type, more introverted. He can do some really cool stuff, but insurance is probably not where he's going to hang his hat. He could come back and surprise me. So I can't invest all of our time in bringing him along to take Grayson's place if at some point he's like, yeah, I decided I don't want to do this. I'm going to go and learn how to develop video games. And I think that's what I really want to do with my life.
How old is he at this point now?
He's a junior. So he's about the same age Grayson was when I first let him come in and do some extra stuff part-time on his day off. But, you know, I have to think outside of that too. So it'll be really cool to see what happens with Grayson interacting with this virtual professional, because this will be his first opportunity to actually train somebody else that he's not his brother and show the process that he's built and then manage their expectations. Because I want that person, in all seriousness, to report to him and have him develop the KPIs, or at least teach him how to develop the KPIs for them and then measure it and then manage performance and all of that. And so I think that'll help him with some of that. But, you know, again, it goes back to, I have to have a clear vision at the top, man. Like I have to know what I want to see for the future, and then also communicate that to everybody, so that when day comes, or if the day comes, it's never going to be a surprise how any of this stuff goes down.
Yeah. And so there, I feel like there's always two conversations you're having, right? There's the family conversation you're having, that you're making that transition into ownership, but you're also, there's a completely different dynamic when it comes to current team members.
Yep.
You know, when we start going through these changes and cleaning up the job site, we realize that, you know, we're people that want to help coach everyone through the process to see if they're going to be willing to make that change. If not, at the end of the day, they're deciding that this isn't a good fit for me, right? So when we realize that, hey, out of all of our customer care team members, we only have three, and I'm sitting in the office on Saturdays doing customer service work, that's an issue. But that's part of the process that we need to implement to change everything and move forward and build the correct culture. So being as transparent with them moving forward is super important, and also making sure that they understand that the way that we approach the agency is that every decision the agency makes is a collective team decision. It's not Lucas and I deciding from the top. We have weekly meetings and say, hey, this is a problem point. How do we fix that? And we collaborate with everybody. And then as a team decide, this is where we're going to move forward. Because until that was able to happen, we were all just kind of stuck in the same place. No one was comfortable talking to each other. Culture took a hit. You know, people were coming to the office grumpy. There really wasn't that sense of teamwork. And that's what we really needed for our agency to kind of succeed and move to that next step. And when we started having those conversations from an ownership level down with everybody, that's really when they kind of took ownership of what they did on a day-to-day basis and kind of moved forward and really kind of bought into the trust that Lucas and I wanted to kind of move forward and what our decision was. So very different conversations that, you know, my dad never had with them. Agency started completely differently, right? He started it from scratch. So it was a very different mindset and when you approach that and how the agency is going to run in the future.
Well, I think that makes it tough too. You know, when you build something from the ground up, you've got battle scars, man. You've got, you know, my back's killing me because for the first several years before I had anybody else with me, it was just me. I was carrying the whole load by myself. And so it's an interesting position for me to be able to step back from being so tied to the top line and driving revenue just so that we could afford to exist. For me now to step back and realize, okay, these are the places we really need to improve. I have no business leading this charge on my own. Let's go find the best consultants. It's cheaper, man. It's honestly cheaper. And I mean, it's not that, trust me, Peggy Corbett is not inexpensive. She's not cheap, but she's really, really good at what she does. And, you know, for the people out there who don't believe in bringing in experts at what they do to make your processes better, number one, if you've been burnt, it's because you didn't vet them good enough. Number two, you know, when you bring somebody in and it's at that level that knows, you know, with laser focus what something needs to look like, you're going to actually save money in the long run, because they know, like, you're going to get 3 hours worth of work out of them compared to 1 hour. You know, their 1 hour is worth 3 hours of somebody else's time who really isn't at the level that they are. And I would much rather spend the money to bring that person in as opposed to try and figure it out on my own. And that's the other thing, man. There's a lot of noise out there. You know, there's a lot of people who have programs and courses and, you know, they're consultants for specific things. And, you know, then you go to a conference like Innovation or any of the other ones that all have vendor halls. And then you walk around and it's like, holy crap, where do you even begin with this? So my question is, as we're beginning to wrap up, what was the process that you guys have used, knowing that you understood you needed to push tech a little bit forward? What's your process for analyzing what decisions, you know, as you're making the decision, what you're going to add and what you're, you know, what you're going to walk away from?
From a tech standpoint, I think you know, before moving on to that, I agree with getting an outside consultant. We took I know Kelly Downing Pierre for a number of years now, and there was a moment where we met with all of our senior team members that had been with us for 25 years plus, and we sat down at lunch. After that lunch, she told me, you know, two specific team members that probably aren't a good fit for our agency unless they severely change. One of those team members, I basically banged my head against the wall for 5 years trying to change his mindset and finally decided to part ways. But that was 5 years of stress that I could have easily gone without. And that was a big one, because that person had been with us for almost 27 years at that point. So that kind of set the pace for everything else. But when it comes to adding tech, I don't let my team see anything unless I've internally tested it for 3 months. I need to know how it's going to affect everything that goes on in the agency, right? Because my approach to it is, there's so many shiny objects, and if it's not improving a current process of mine, it doesn't make sense to add, because it's just going to frustrate everybody. It's going to frustrate me because it's not really doing anything. It's going to frustrate the team because now I've come in and given them something else to worry about. What I need is tech that comes in and says, okay, if this is what my renewal process looks like, where does this slot in and how does that make that renewal process better? Because that's where everyone kind of loses it. They just throw money at it and think it's going to solve whatever problem they have, and then realize it's a bigger problem than what it is. So really overanalyzing it and making sure I understand it from A to Z, how it works and how it's going to affect the team primarily.
Yeah, I think that's probably also a very wise way to approach that stuff, man, because if you put your team on every demo with you, they're going to want every single product. And that's what I mean, these people are good salespeople, the majority of them, for these software companies. So they're going to sell people. And, yeah, you know, if you don't have the process for how you're going to evaluate it, you could end up with a lot of recurring charges in your monthly bank statement that you're not familiar with, you know, after a couple of years, because nobody's ever even using it. We are at 1 o'clock. I know we had a late start, man, but I'm going to be respectful of your time. I have one last question for you before we wrap this up. Best pierogi filling from an official official Polish guy. I need to know.
Yeah, I'm a sweet cheese type of guy.
Yeah? Huh.
Yeah, okay. Sweet cheese or blueberry, a little bit. And I'm not a sour cream type of guy on top. I like a little bit of sugar. Make it. It's kind of, I don't know. It's that's the way that I usually tend to do it.
Yeah, it's interesting, man, because you do. You like. They run the gamut. So, Kyle, there are more types of pierogies than what Mrs. T's makes, just so you know. but seriously, like, I wasn't aware. There was a lady from Poland that worked with me in another place a few years back, and she opened my mind to, like, the fact there's apricot and blueberries and, like, all kinds of fruit-based stuff in addition to what, you know, the traditional sauerkraut and mushroom or potato and cheddar or whatever else. So.
Huh.
Interesting. Yeah, but I mean, they're good, man.
A nice pierogi.
Had so many different varieties. I'll never forget, you know, I figured out what my mom was talking about when I was old enough to make them for myself, for my family, because my mom would always talk about how she worked all day making these quadruple batches of pierogies, and then they're gone in like 15 minutes because we just absolutely housed them as kids. Like, it was one of our favorite things to eat. Now the pierogies aren't so kind to the old midsection if you eat them in bulk. So I have to, you know, I only get them on rare occasions at this point, but that's funny, man. That's good to know. I'm going to have to try blueberries and sweet cream at this point and sprinkle some sugar on them. So, well, listen, man, really appreciate you coming on. Sorry for all the turbulence as we were getting off the ground, but I think that discussion was really good. You shared some really valuable insight for people, both about you know, what your agency transition has looked like and what your role looks like now, but also just talking about culture and some of the systems that you use and how that affects those things. So I know that agents have plenty to take away from you, and look forward to having you back, man. I'm sure we will at some point where we can deep dive, because we didn't even get into commercial or any of the stuff that you're doing on that side. And I know that's a discussion in and of itself.
Yeah. I mean, you know me for quite some time, I tend to be very analytical in the way that I kind of approach things. So everything kind of go down a rabbit hole and things that we've done and the possible hypotheticals. And I kind of think of 10 steps ahead. But yeah, I think the number one take away from this is that don't be afraid to collaborate with other agency owners. Ask people questions. There's people that are going to be willing to help you because they've been in that position at one point. So you got to put your pride aside sometimes and ask for help. And that's really going to kind of help you move forward in a lot of situations too. So,
yep, absolutely. All right, everybody. He has been Bogus Hansel from Chicago, Illinois. Great conversation, and look forward to having him back. We'll catch you guys next time. See ya.
You've been listening to the Power Producers Podcast. You can follow Killing Commercial Insurance on Facebook and YouTube. And if you want to take your game to the next level, check out our book, The Extra 2 Minutes, and our website, killingcommercial.com.